afternoon, or good evening almost. Good afternoon, moving into evening. So we are here at the South San Luis Obispo County Sanitation District Board of Directors meeting for Wednesday, August 7th. If you will all please rise and join Director Ray Russell in the Pledge of Allegiance.
Place your hand over heart and join me.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
And now we will do roll call, please.
Director Austin?
Here.
Director Ray Russom?
Here.
Director Lee?
I am here as well, so guess what? We get to keep going. So with that, we'll go to agenda review. Anybody have any questions for staff or want to proceed with the agenda as published?
I'm wondering if we should move B in front of A, because I think the people who are here in the audience are here for the second item.
I'm good with that.
I think that would be nice for the audience.
Okay, so moving 6B in front of 6A?
Yes.
Okay, great. So any objection to proceeding with that? We will proceed.
I don't know. Okay. Would that work with him with their, we have a presentation? I guess that's okay, yeah.
How about this? Raise your hand if you're here for item 6A. Well, we know you're here for all the items. 6B? Are we cool? Is that okay? All right.
Works for me.
Works for me.
Okay, so with that, we will proceed with the agenda under that modification. Everybody good? Great. So that takes us to our public comment period, where we do have an opportunity for members of the public to talk on items that are not on the agenda. So at this point, we will ask you to come forward and speak for no more than 3 minutes on subjects that are not, your comments should be limited to those matters which are within the jurisdiction of the district but are not on tonight's agenda. And in accordance with the Brown Act, we will not be taking under any formal action on matters that are not published on the agenda. So is there any member of the public that wants to come forward and speak under public comment? Seeing no one come forward, I'll go ahead and close public comment and proceed into our consent agenda. Anybody have any questions or items that they want to pull off of the consent calendar?
I do want to recognize that there were a couple of changes that the bookkeeper secretary made, so maybe she can announce those before we make a motion. Because they're unpublished.
So there was a revised agenda presented tonight. It has the addition of Linda Austin being paid for the month of July for her board service. And there was an addition or a change to the minutes item. So that's item 5B. Page 4, second paragraph, third sentence starts G. Shin. I had her down as speaking in support of adopting the community workforce agreement. She actually spoke in opposition of adopting the community workforce agreement.
So with those two changes, I'll move that we accept items 5A and 5B.
Actually, I'm going to open up to the public first.
Oh, I guess they get
it. So go ahead and see if there's any member of the public that wants to speak on items on the consent calendar.
Good evening. I am Julie Tacker, and a couple of concerns, really just reiterating some very high prices that I didn't want to see, and that is your legal counsel bills, $7,640 for May and June from Mr. Trujillo, June with Jones Mayer, another $1,000. A bit taken aback by the invoice for regional government services for the recruitment of the operator in training. As I understood it, that was a one-year position, and you paid almost $7,000 to find that person. That's a mind blower. I don't remember the district ever doing that before for rank and file. I've seen them do it for hiring a GM.
Can you tell me where you're seeing that?
That is regional government services on page 5A.
I'm seeing 600.
I know, what can you?
It's halfway down.
6 inches down the page.
So there's one at the bottom as well for 660.
I see the one at the bottom.
Right. Yeah, go up higher. About 2.5 inches. Yeah. Okay. So if you combine those, it's a lot. It's a lot of money to find someone to work for you for a operator in training. Anyway, I would like to proceed to the minutes, in particular item 6B, when the board had the discussion about the Oceano billing on the county tax rolls. And I just wanted to underscore part of what Mr. Gent described in the billing history and the benefits with going with the county versus going with the cities. Or vice versa. The benefit actually with the cities is that the city provides additional services that Oceano never did. And so when that comes back to your board, I think it would be prudent for staff to identify and try to qualify or quantify the value of that service, those services that the cities provide associated with new hookups, et cetera, and that Oceano's bid back in 2015-16 for $22,000 a year did not include those same services. So that's it for now. Thank you.
Thank you for those comments. Is there anyone else that wants to speak on the consent calendar? If not, we'll go ahead and close that and bring it back and ask staff to clarify the regional government service line item charges.
Yeah, so in regards to the RGS service, heard a couple of things, the expense in general. So that's, the district budgeted $15,000 for recruitment during the fiscal year. And so it's within that budget. And probably the most notable thing is that the district doesn't staff an HR representative, and so we consult through a variety of agencies to provide our HR support, and RGS is one of those organizations that we use to assist in HR. In this particular recruitment, we had 99 applicants. RGS provided the pre-screening. They provided the venue for the initial interview, sat on the interview panel, participated in doing the pre-screening of that. So I think that amount is fine based on the amount of effort that was put in and provided by RGS. The other thing that I wanted to point out, I think I heard the speaker say that this was only a one-year position, but this is we're hiring a full-time permanent person in this position. So this is not for a temporary person that we're doing this. This is for a continuous staff member. And then, did you want me to respond to any of the other questions?
If there, you feel there's something to add, I kind of heard those more as comments versus versus questions.
Yeah, I will agree. Ms. Tacker is correct on in regards to Oceano in the past. I incorrectly spoke at the last meeting. I don't know that many people picked up on it. The cities do provide a service when the district has new connections. Grover Beach and Arroyo Grande will collect the district's connection fee and pass that through to us. I misspoke at the last meeting when I indicated that prior to moving off that all three agencies did that. That was a service that Oceano never provided, was that pass through for the connection fees. And so that's a point that was clarified to me by staff after the meeting. And so it's a nuance that's definitely relevant to the discussion with city managers as we meet and go into discussions and figure out a best course of action moving forward with the billing on whether we continue with the tax rolls or use the agency membership and their water bills to collect the billing. And so we'll negotiate that. That is a service we appreciate the other cities doing because it alleviates staff from having to participate in that effort.
Very good. Did that generate any other questions from board? No. If not, someone prepared to make a motion?
I will renew my motion to approve warrants and meeting minutes of July 17, 2019 with the additional changes as described by the secretary.
I'll second.
Second.
Very good. We have a motion and a second. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye.
Any opposed? Motion carries. Very good. So then that will take us to item 6B. So make sure I'm not missing anything. Yes, 6B, the draft community workforce agreement, receive an update and provide direction to staff. And so, Mr. Gent, if you would provide an update.
Good evening, Jeremy Gent, district administrator. It's recommended that the board receive this update and provide direction to staff. At the July 17th meeting, we received direction to move forward with modifications to the community workforce agreement to remove the construction management component. It was anticipated at that point that we would have information back from the trades on their agreement to those revisions, but at time of publish and even as of today, I have not received correspondence from the trades group. I do believe that Director Lee was contacted by them just before the meeting, and he can maybe provide an update to that effect. The direction we took away was a revision to, as I said earlier, remove the construction management component. You can see the edits that were made there. Those second couple sentences in the that section 3.3.4 were removed. This does bring it into alignment with that section in the City of Slo's agreement that takes out the construction management. So it's a pretty straightforward change that council did. And so this was provided back to the trades. And we have not heard whether they're in agreement with those language changes at this point. Also at the last meeting, Director Austin asked for an accounting of what had been spent to date in the effort. I was able to compile in engineering services. There was $9,300 in additional effort largely from Mike Nunley and Associates in working on outreach to the proposers, largely on the construction management and keeping them abreast of what was going on and providing addenda to that, to those efforts, communicating with USDA about the inclusion of the project labor agreement. The bulk of the effort was obviously spent in legal services as they reviewed the agreement, made modifications, sat through multiple conference calls with the Trades Council, and then I estimated my time at just approximately 80 hours at a weighted labor rate of and got to the $12,000 for a total of $38,800 spent to date. In addition to that, we had reached out early on in the process because the question was, like, what's the cost of delaying the project? And a month of delay is approximately, it's hard to estimate, but Kennedy Jenks came back with a number of $55,000 per month of delay. I will note that at this point, staff does not believe that any of these efforts have delayed the project because critical path remains the USDA funding as we continue to make modifications and answer USDA questions in regards to the application for their financing. And so with that concludes my staff report, and unfortunately we do not have an agreement before you this evening to move on.
And thank you for that. So just to add one element, I was contacted by the trades just before the meeting, before walking in, and they have taken it under advisement, and they're still taking it under advisement. So,
what does that mean, taking it under advisement?
Whether they are going to sign the document as without the operating engineers being a part of the agreement.
And I'm still not understanding what that means. Does that mean they're still deciding what they're going to do?
They are, not knowing specifically, I didn't have that long of an opportunity, but yes, there's still, it sounds like there are still discussions as to whether they will intend to move forward with signing the agreement, with or without the operating engineers part of that. And so the question that I did not get a good answer to was, we need to set a timeline or a deadline for this decision by the trade unions. And so I did say we perhaps could put forward a deadline this evening. What deadline would work for them? And we can decide on what deadline we want to use for that.
So. And did they speak to this, which is a different?
They did not.
It's kind of similar.
Yeah. So they did not. So from that perspective, the information from the trade unions is still pending from that perspective. So. So that's about all the update that I can provide. I've asked them to stop contacting me because they need to be communicating directly with Mr. Gent. And so hopefully that will become the case moving forward.
So I'm concerned that we received some correspondence regarding this from legal counsel 2 hours before the meeting tonight. I had corresponded with you about that. I'm having considerable heartburn about that because I haven't had any time to digest that, ask questions, consider what my questions are, etc. And I'd like to kind of get some sort of feel for what I read and what we're doing didn't line up for me directly. And so maybe you can speak to that and kind of help the people in the audience to understand what I'm talking about because they haven't seen what I'm talking about.
So I will defer to counsel because they're actually, it does roll into a threat of litigation as well. So I'll be mindful of the Brown Act and with that potential there, I'll defer to counsel. But in regards to the correspondence, the district did receive, was forwarded a letter that was on USDA letterhead. It was in the state of New York, where the U.S. Department of Agriculture did deny funding a project. It was a wastewater project as well, due to not meeting certain sections of the Code of Federal Regulations that require fair and competitive components. And so we received that, the staff received that yesterday. And so when I received that, about 30 minutes later, I forwarded it to council and said, hey, does this pose an issue for the district and, you know, with our community workforce agreement? And then legal counsel was concerned. They prepared a memo, and then that was released to the board today, this afternoon. So the timing was less than ideal, but certainly it's better today than tomorrow after you have to consider this tonight.
So my question is, and I don't know to whom the question is addressed, but I understand what the letter said. My question is, did they have time to review the PLA in question and the language in our PLA? Because that's a critical departure or nexus. In other words, it said that there were issues with USDA and there was issues with the way things were worded, but I didn't see any analysis of what their PLA says and what ours is proposed to say.
Correct. And so we do not have a USDA opinion on our project and our community workforce agreement. And so that is something we have sent the community workforce agreement to the USDA.
And well, let me stop you because I'm not asking about the USDA.
Okay.
I'm asking about council because council's opinion was based on the letter but not a comparative analysis, correct?
I'll defer to council.
Okay.
To answer that. Yeah.
I just want to make sure I'm understanding where that analysis came from. I understand in general what the letter's saying, but I'm not clear on what level of analysis was done to determine how much of a threat that is in regards to our specific PLA. And I'm not talking about threat to USDA funding. I'm talking about threat of litigation.
Oh, okay.
Okay. So this opinion was generated with less than 24 hours notice.
Yeah, absolutely.
So we were,
that's what I'm saying, yeah.
It brought to my attention last evening. I was on the phone this morning. We created this memo and got it to the board as timely as we could. It did analyze the federal regulations, which are the same regulations throughout the United States and also apply to New York. There certainly could be further analysis. This was just done to advise the board that there are some issues. It certainly would be appropriate to talk about these issues in a closed session now that there was a threat of litigation, my understanding made at the meeting that I missed. So the board is entitled to go into closed session, properly noticed for a future meeting.
And then with regard to that language that's in the federal law, would that apply with or without the PLA for any project? I'm very unclear on where that line is. For example, if we have our RFP or RFQ out there, and that has, that's still subject to that same law, with or without a PLA, correct? When we can't be anti-competitive in anything that we do, whether we have USDA funding or not, right?
Correct.
So and the USDA funding isn't the part that's driving whether or not this is
No, it's the local preference requirement. So if you were to strike the local preference requirement to comply with federal regulations and be eligible for USDA funding, then we would have to take that out of our contract, which essentially negates the whole purpose of having local preferences.
Okay. And then, okay. So there's more to come in closed session about that.
We certainly could do that. That's the board's pleasure.
I'll wait to hear from the rest of the board. Jeremy, I can't recall. You've probably already told us, and it's just slipping my mind. San Luis does not have USDA funding, right? Because they don't qualify for that, right?
Correct. They do not have. I believe they have state revolving fund.
And then, lastly, until I hear from my compatriots here, the letter that was sent—not the letter from council, but the letter that was brought to our attention. Specifically spoke to the community workforce agreement being entered into after the application for USDA funding. Is that that's not the case here, is it?
So, no. At this point, the USDA has full notice that the board is intending on moving forward with the project labor agreement. So the application is not complete or finalized. So the process is right now, we're completing that application, which is a very involved process, and it's iterative with a back and forth as they review things and ask questions. This is one of the challenges in working through USDA funding is they are reluctant to provide any official answers on anything until you reach a point in the project called the letter of conditions. And this letter of conditions basically spells out all the requirements that USDA has. And so, and at this point, they're just requesting information, and so they just say, give it to us, and we'll give you our official answer in that letter of conditions. So at this point, they have not spoke to the, whether the project labor agreement is in effect or not. But the letter that you're referring to, the New York letter, indicated that there could have been more than one. They said one of the non-competitive issues, as an example, is this item. And I do believe, they focused in on the apprentice program. And our PLA does have a very similar apprentice program clause is what they took issue with in that agreement. They also, during the application process, took issue with the local hire provisions. That particular agency in the New York example had actually removed that local hire requirement in an attempt to appease the U.S. Department of Agriculture. But then after the fact, as they moved forward, because they didn't take out all of the competitive issues, the USDA chose not to fund their project. So that being said, we have the local hire portion in our agreement, and we also have the apprentice program requirements in our agreement, which both would appear to me, and again, I will defer to legal counsel because it does lend itself more toward a legal opinion, but it does appear that those two items were noted in that letter.
I hear what you're saying, but you're not answering my question, so I'm going to quote from the letter.
Okay.
Our decision to approve loan and grant funding was reached prior to our being informed that the city was considering the use of PLA for the project. Then all the problems came after that. So what I'm bringing forward is we're ironing out these issues prior to that. And this is happening afterwards and could not be cured. So I guess I'm suggesting that we'll know that answer before we get that letter, rather than, in this case, all of that happening after they received their approval for that funding.
Absolutely. You're absolutely correct. At this point, we still have a timeline to figure out whether USDA funding is compatible with this. The only risk would be as moving forward as if we were to bid this, and it's really at the point of bid. If we get bid results and we then have to go back and not fund it, we actually would expose the district to potential other risks with contractors that may have been awarded work, and now we can no longer fund it on the schedule that we had initially set out to because of that retracted funding. And I think that was one of the things that the council attempted to point out in their memo, was that if we were to continue down this path and move forward at risk, and USDA came back after. But yes, our intent would be to know this answer before bidding, and we actually have a clause in the language of the project labor agreement that says if it's not compatible with our funding, then the agreement is null and void. And so we have that covered. The only nuance is going back to if we were to move forward and actually award some work and then have to undo that.
So then there's a timeline and a very prescribed order in which we need to do this to protect us, not necessarily making the choice about whether or not to go forward.
Correct, yeah. I don't think
so
that,
make
yeah,
sure
we
not
can.
Putting carts before horses.
Right, so yes, there's nothing in that memo that that would indicate that there's an immediate risk right now and that we can't get to an answer. We can still work with USDA. I would anticipate that we may not know for another couple months whether USDA will fund the project with the PLA and because we haven't reached that letter of conditions portion.
So then, just for the sake of the people next to me, I see no reason why we couldn't do a very quick deadline for moving forward with this and making sure that everybody can come to a decision so that we're not sitting here pussyfooting around, and I'm not allowed to say that, and, get rolling. So.
Okay. Do you have questions?
Well, I think what we've been doing is pussyfooting around, and I think I'll wait. I don't really have any questions, but a timeline of what when they first approached, when we first said, okay, we'll look into it. Do you have that? I don't have that handy. And the date we were going to go out to bid, and then how much this has gone on. When were we actually supposed to start bidding the project if we didn't start looking into the PLA? When was the actual date?
So our intent was to be able to bid the project in the early fall, which was September, October. That has slipped to October, November. As I pointed out earlier, I cannot attribute that to the PLA efforts, with the exception of it taking some of my timeline. The USDA funding, that is what has largely caused that schedule slip to move from early fall to late fall. I can't characterize the PLA effort as being the primary contributor to that schedule slip there. But at this point, we're looking at September before we have an answer.
We're
starting to catch up with where the PLA issue could become the critical path item for moving the project forward.
And starting October, November, then it rains. And
yeah,
if we're getting rain like we did, we'll have a lot of rain. So what happens there, then the job gets held off.
So we were going to not vote either way.
We were going to construct. We're going to start construction March, April of next year. So yeah. So
correct. We'd be looking at maybe a notice to proceed in late January with the contractor moving in, doing some setup, and starting in early spring to begin work.
Okay. Then on the staff report, was there when you presented them with the agreement and there was no response, was there was a date then to respond, wasn't there?
Well,
didn't we have a deadline to respond then?
I gave them a deadline of this past Thursday, and it was meant to meet the Brown Act requirements. It was my understanding in leaving the last meeting, the July 17th meeting, is that this would all be done and ready to go at this meeting. That was, I think that was the general consensus, but there was certainly no action taken to set that deadline. But
it was understood.
It was
understood.
And
the laborers union, did they contact you at all during that time? Did you hear anything from them?
I've had zero correspondence with the trades since we walked out of the meeting that evening. I've contacted them both by email and phone, asking for any sort of update, and so I don't know. They're working on something or dissatisfied with something, but I have not been able to. So I reached out to Jeff to see if he had heard anything. And at that time he hadn't, so he tried to get some information, and then our first real bit of information, I believe, was literally while he was walking in the meeting this evening.
Well, do you remember the meeting when they were all here and it was going to be like 1 month? Wasn't it? It's like we could get this through, just...
That was the initial
portrayal.
And how
long has it been since then? We've had quite a couple months.
So I think that was a May 1st meeting where we, it was brought up in April. I think we had at the first meeting in April, we had a legal opinion at the second meeting in April on whether it was legal or not. Mm-hmm. Trades came in on the May 1st meeting, I believe. And that's where we really received direction to move forward with it and started negotiating the agreement on May 1st.
So June, July, okay. Okay, well, I don't have any more comments until after public comment.
So just have one more question for you, Jeremy. In the funding scenarios, so obviously the USDA has benefits. If we were to not use the USDA as a funding source, what are the impacts to either the PLA, Community Workforce Agreement, versus i.e. the cost of money, whether it's bonds or iBank or some other funding scenario?
So the favorable terms of USDA are pretty substantial, and right now we're jumping through a lot of strings attached to that money. So the district has been over the past several years jumping through those hoops in order to stay in alignment with the USDA funding. So some of the changes, we did get notification from USDA. Our financing rate through them would be 2.5% for 40 years. And so that's a very favorable term versus on the open market, we're looking at between 3.8 to 4.1% interest rates.
Is that reflective of the current change?
So there was a 0.25% drop on July 31st. The Fed Reserve did reduce that, and no, that 0.25% decrease has not been included in that 3.8 to 4.1% that the bond market and the iBank funding that we're entertaining has provided us. So that's kind of that delta. In addition, the other benefit of USDA is there's a potential for loan forgiveness. We don't, I'll go back to the letter of conditions, we won't know any potential loan forgiveness, but often 10 to 20% of the loan, in this case $4.5 million, depending on what's going on at the USDA, they will forgive 10 to 20% of that loan value when they're dealing with a disadvantaged community. So there's that potential forgiveness is one cost, and then the the 40-year term versus a 30-year term at the extremely subsidized interest rate at 2.5% would be what the district would be walking away from to move off the USDA.
But there is still strings attached to the USDA as you're still working through the process, whether it be additional environmental concerns or additional hydraulic concerns that are still unresolved currently. You're being asked for additional information outside of the parameters of the
hydraulic concerns.
Well, it's just
correct. And yeah, maybe I can speak. You know, larger. And so Jeff and I pre-met before this meeting, and he had this question, so he's got a little bit more detail. So on USDA, I was just explaining to him that, you know, some of the schedule slip with USDA is we continue to get, and it's because it's a review process, and so they've asked some additional questions about our biological assessment that was done back in 2015, and that maybe it was okay for CEQA, but this has to satisfy all the NEPA requirements, which is the federal regulations, and so they've asked for additional biological assessment. So we had to kind of contract with Rincon consultants who had done the initial environmental, and so they are doing this updated biological assessment to provide to USDA. In addition to that, they have some questions about the floodplain analysis. As you know, the plant is located in a floodplain. They've asked for Mike Nunley and Associates to go through a floodplain analysis, which is an eight-step process. Eight-step actually means some. That's the actual official process for doing the flood analysis, and so they've requested that work effort go on. So that work is ongoing behind the scenes and has already been set in motion, and it's part of completing the project engineering report for the USDA application, and so it's just part of that back and forth of making sure they're satisfied that it's a viable, meaningful project that is not at substantial risks, and so they want to be satisfied that they're putting federal dollars to good use, and so that's why we're jumping through these extra hoops, and they can require that because of the favorable terms on the loan.
Which also solidifies the response you made earlier as to why the PLA is not the critical path in the USDA funding approval process. I mean, there's other things that they're asking that have not that are extending their review time, not specifically the PLA.
Correct. Yes, the PLA has not appeared to. While the USDA has raised concerns and said they would want to analyze our CWA and see if it met, it has not seemed like it was a time constraint, or they haven't asked for more time to complete that portion of the task. They don't really provide us with iron timelines on when they will complete certain tasks.
Okay. I have two questions based on what all y'all said. Okay. At what point is that forgiveness decision made?
So that actually comes with the letter of conditions when...
Oh, really?
Yes.
So it's made on the front end.
So on the front end, yes. We will know...
So it's not like a student loan where at the end you say
look at us, we did great stuff, can you forgive some of it? No, they will tell us up front.
Excellent. And then secondly, I'm less than happy to hear that the trades gave total silence after guaranteeing quick turnarounds to us. I'm really not happy to hear that. My question to you is, in terms of setting a timeline for going forward, if we were to give a 7-day deadline so that we could move forward and perhaps even toward a second meeting in August if we have to just make sure we're rolling, right? I'm happy with that, but I'm not staff. So can you speak to what would be helpful in order to move things forward and keep making sure that this is something we're kind of trying to, a worthy goal we're trying to achieve, but without delaying, as Director Austin is rightly concerned about.
So, yes, I think at this point, because of the silence, more concerned of actually setting some timeline for them, you know, allowing the board to basically set a go or no-go timeline for them to respond, mainly because it's Yes, we can have another meeting. Staff can respond. That's not an issue. We can be prepared for it, because it really is this yellow paragraph that you see is the change that we've proposed. But the unknown is if they would ask for additional changes, because I just don't know at this point if they're going to take issue with that language as drafted, if there's a back and forth that needs to happen. So, but yes, I would like to have a firm decision by the meeting in September, the first meeting in September, so that we can start working on the front end documents, because that's a task that Mike Nunley needs to do on the bid documents, so that we can be ready to go in October and November. And at this point, we can't really craft that without knowing, are we a PLA contractor and not a PLA contractor?
All right, thank you. And I'll wait for my thoughts until after I hear from the public.
Okay. Very good. So I'll go ahead and open this up to the public, see if there's any members of the public that want to come forward and speak on this item. Please come forward, state your name.
Thank you, Chairman Lee, directors. My name's Russell Johnson. I'm here on behalf of the Associated Builders and Contractors. You had our comment letter from your meeting last month. My colleague Jennifer was able to deliver that for you. As the stewards of the taxpayers' dollars and the ratepayers for the district, you know well the complexity of public works projects. You're seeing also, you know, you got to line up your environmental clearances, then you got to line up your funding, and now we're looking at the complexity of a project labor agreement. Project labor agreements are discriminatory. They just discriminate against those in the workforce that are not non-signatory and those contractors that choose to be non-signatory. But then you also have just the complexities of messing around with them. I think you're dealing with some of that now. Your staff's been telling you how much time they've been spending on it. And you've got the potential that if it continues to delay and it starts affecting your bid timelines, then you could look at additional costs that your administrator mentioned. I will tell you the apprenticeship piece is pretty similar in every PLA. So if USDA had an issue with the PLA in New York because of the apprenticeship piece, they're going to have the same problem with your apprenticeship piece in your project labor agreement. I think you have an option tonight. And that option is you can give staff the direction. It's like, hey, we tried. Trades didn't respond. They're not even here tonight. They didn't even make a good faith effort to show up tonight. And I think you should say, you know what? I think we gave them time to respond. They didn't. Let's move forward without a PLA. It's complex enough to do these public works projects. Let's try to simplify it and remove the PLA so you guys can move forward and deliver a project on time. And without the increased costs that project labor agreements bring. Thank you.
Thank you for those comments. Anyone else want to come forward and speak on this item?
Julie Tacker, and there was a deadline. Close of business last Thursday, that was August 1st. No word, no questions, no follow-up from the trades to your administrator. You got your answer. They don't want to play ball. And just like the gentleman before me, they're not here to argue their point tonight or ask for more time. So I just don't know why you would give them more time. They made their overtures for months. They came out in force. Let the district move on with its process. I think I'm a couple of, speaking of process, the letter you referenced is not available for the public. So I have no idea what you're talking about, only what I can pick up from what you said. And I feel very much at a disadvantage to help you. That's my job from here, is to help you make decisions. And I don't have that piece. So I would like it. It would have been nice to have it provided tonight. If it was closed session material, you probably shouldn't have talked about it until after that was discussed in closed session. And I would understand that. So I almost would like a copy now, and that you all take a break so that we can read it and then comment fully informed. because we're not. I'm not. I feel left out, and I'm here to help you make good decisions for the district. What I did hear was a whole lot of things I hadn't heard about the USDA, asking a lot of questions in the process that your staff is going through to meet the test for that USDA loan. And that's coming at a cost, and I'm not seeing, or we haven't had administrators' reports to keep us abreast of what the USDA is asking for. One question that comes to mind as we hear USDA is associated with the disadvantaged nature of the community of Oceano. Have you considered having a different rate for Oceano so that they actually benefit from their status, because that contribution is significant to the project and the whole district is going to benefit from their disadvantage. So I don't know that that's fair. I don't know that that's fair, and I don't know if they should have a different rate structure. The other thing about USDA, and it doesn't surprise me, and if you'll allow, that USDA is going to pick apart a PLA because they have many disadvantaged communities that are eligible for that money, and they want that money to go as far as it can. And everyone in this room and everyone at the board, everyone who was here at your last meeting, agrees that the PLA is going to drive the price of the project up. So why would USDA want their very valued few dollars to go to the higher price project when they are fully intended to go to the best bang for the buck at a lower price?
Thank you for those comments. Anyone else want to come forward and speak on this item?
Patricia Price, Aurora Grandy. I have been to every meeting lately, and I've listened to the unions pitching what they were going to do and why we should go with them, and I thought that sounded very good. I thought that sounded very reasonable. We should check into it. The things that have come up since that in the last 4 months, I don't think that way anymore. I've pretty much watched, I've watched them stonewall, and the fact that they have not responded since the last meeting says to me that we're not going to get any more satisfaction out of them. They don't want to deal. They want it their way, and that's all they're going to settle for. So I would suggest we just call the deadline, which it was. It was my understanding they would respond by last Thursday, and they didn't. The fact that they made no overtures to me says, you know, we really don't need to deal with them. Let's save this district money. If it's going to cost more to use them, that's a real minus right there. So I suggest we call the deadline, and move on without this. Thank you.
Anyone else want to come forward and speak on this item? Okay, no, seeing no one else come forward, I'll go ahead and close this item and bring it back for discussion.
You want me to go?
Sure.
Well, I think you pretty much know how I feel.
What do you guess?
But I, just what the public commenter said, what I was going to say, that we had a deadline to come to respond to the new contract, and they just had no response. And now today, before the meeting, they want more time, and that's not, more time is more money. And even the whole PLA, like you said, it's going to cost more money. Why would anyone in charge of the ratepayer, in charge of, you know, government money, vote to do a project that we already know is going to cost more when it's not necessary?
I'll disagree with that as the premise, but I agree. So,
well, it just doesn't make sense to me. And the USDA and or the federal government. We are a government entity, and we should do our projects with open and fair competition, and this is not it. And like she said, they have stonewalled. And, you know, we don't work for them. We work for this district. This is our primary, this is where our fiduciary responsibility is, not letting them have more time. They didn't respond. It's dead to me. It's over. I think we should move on with our plan, get the bid out, and move on with this project and stop this, because it's going to be, you know, the threat of lawsuit is real. It's, and look at the controversy it is. It's been a controversy from day one. We don't need that. We're just a little district. We're not a big city. We just need to do our project. And we need to do it in the most fiscally responsible way, and that is to just open it up like we planned. And we need to drop this PLA and move forward. And that's all I can say. It's in the best interest of, you know, everyone. Like, what are... the complexities. Why do we have to add those if we don't need to? You know, just to benefit a certain group of people. You know, we're supposed to, like, jobs are out for everyone in the county, and other contractors that are non-union, they're local. They are local people. So the thought of, well, the local people, and we don't even know if they're going to be being local people. There may be people from other areas too. So I think this just added a whole bunch of unnecessary time and money to this district that we don't need to do. And I want to stop it now and just, you know, no 7 days or anything. Tonight's the night. I think we need to make a decision and do what's best for this district and these ratepayers, our taxpayers, and call it good. That's what I have. That's the way I feel.
Find myself again this week, the woman in the middle, even though I'm over on the right. Okay, so I want to circle back to a little bit of mischaracterization that this has been controversial from the get-go. It hasn't been. And the first meeting we had was a love fest over this, and we had a 3-0 vote. So to say it's controversial from the beginning isn't true. But as it's become more and more tangled, it has gotten that, and rightly so. As people kind of begin to get into the nuts and bolts of it, other people come forward, and that's great. So I'm happy that the process is working. That's what the process is for. So I'm good with that. And why are we doing this? It is not to benefit a small group of people. The thinking is that all the ratepayers of the district are going to benefit from the economic recapturing, I guess, or lack of leakage of as much taxpayer dollars as we can that we spend out of this district to come back into our communities as a whole. And so there's a fundamental difference in how you look at this contract, and I get that. And so for me, that is where my decision-making is coming from. It is a purely economic decision. While it might cost a little on the front end, that is more, which we have not proven and cannot demonstrate, but there is some logic there. But the question is, does that get amplified on the way back in? And I think fundamentally that would be true. And I also think that the district administrator is right to point out that if we don't have a local provision in there, then there's no point, because that's where the nexus is. So if we're just doing a PLA but not having the local provision, then we're not getting that amplification of the taxpayer dollars coming back into our community and staying here. So, that being said, as I said, I am not happy. Like, you all heard me at that first meeting where I said, can you do this? And Director Lee said 60 days, and I said, no, we're going to do 30. Can you do that? And they said, yes. And now I'm hearing that there's radio silence. That makes me really not happy. I do, however, feel it's unfair that we did not give a hard deadline. We gave a soft deadline. So my point of view is 7 days, no revisions. We're done. Because the time for you to come back and say, well, we didn't like this, we do like that, that passed when you let 2 weeks pass and let us go to a meeting without hearing anything. So I would be for a hard deadline at 7 days. This is the language you get, and we move forward. So to say we tried, I don't think it's time to throw our hands in the air right now. We've spent money to do this. The board took action to try and put forth this attempt at recapturing those dollars. but I'm almost there hearing about that radio silence. So I would be for 7 days, we're done, and hopefully we get an agreement and maybe even come back for a second meeting if that's necessary to get that finalized and moving forward either direction, so that September 1, we're ready to go and we haven't missed a beat in terms of making sure that nothing gets held up by this, what I see as a very worthy attempt to recapture and keep dollars here in our community.
And I will be closer to Karen than I am with Linda with regards to the initial approach, and that my thoughts on a community force workforce agreement are along the lines of a number of these items are incorporated into the public realm currently. There's prevailing wage, there's DIR requirements, there's a number of a plethora of reporting requirements that end up being augmented and characterized in a PLA that are beneficial to us as a community, beneficial to our local workforce, and as you mentioned, no way to substantiate the upfront cost increase, not really a way to substantiate the return benefit to the community. But there's I can see realistic conversations on both sides. Yeah. So with your comment about giving 7 days towards a drop-dead date, I'm in support of that. So with the caveat that if the 7 days comes and it's a yes, then we probably as a district need a closed session to discuss the potential letter, the potential litigative action with regards to this. And I will ask ultimately counsel is if the letter that we received, not the response, the confidential response, but if that letter is something that should be provided to the public at this point, or when would be the appropriate time for that letter to be shared?
Thank you. It is a public document.
Okay.
Anyone can request it.
Okay. So if that's something that is available, we probably should make that available to the public. So.
With the understanding that the advice that came from it and the questions and things that we can't discuss here is not to be released because that's got attorney-client.
Exactly, which is why I go to if we provide direction this evening for a 7-day yes or no from the trades, and if it's a yes, then we provide direction to staff that we need a closed session effectively 2 weeks from tonight at our second meeting to discuss the potential litigation. If it's no, from the trades, then there's no reason for the closed session. So I guess that would be the potential direction that I would see coming from us this evening is hard and fast deadline for yes or no, and then depending upon that answer, the district decision or understanding to have a closed session possibility.
What do you think of that? I know you're not a voting member, but I still care about what you think.
Well, I certainly appreciate that. So that timeline, I was kind of tracking to make sure that if I could identify any hiccups that might need to be addressed or clarifications I might need to seek. And I think I understand. So we will have an answer 7 days from now, whether the trades are in or out. That'll be a Wednesday. It will be that Friday that I'll have to satisfy the Brown Act. Could be either just the way I'm understanding it, could be potentially just a closed session item, or is the direction to seek approval, if we were to move forward with that, would we enter into an agreement that night? Would we have a closed session item and an open session item? The contract would have to be, the PLA would have to be agreed to in public. It couldn't be agreed to in the closed session. So I'm just asking whether there's the two items are not on the agenda.
And since that would be a special meeting, maybe that's a question for council, is could we, dominoes falling in the correct order for PLA to be signed, could that be done in a special meeting, or does that need to be done at a regular meeting, or does it matter?
No, it can be done in a special meeting. The only restrictions for special meetings is you can't approve employment contracts.
Can I just say something?
Mm-hmm, of course.
I'm just really not happy because you say this is going to help the community. But you don't really know. You don't really know how much more it's going to cost or how much will be spent here. But you, but it's okay to pay up front, you know, using taxpayers' dollars to pay on the thought that maybe it'll help the community when
Well, and I think
when
we can. Have, I think we can agree to disagree on that.
I'm going to speak, and so when the USDA money's up in the air, you know, so you're, and you are going for one group of people. There's a whole group of people out there that won't not be able to bid this job. So I just don't understand your reasoning for doing this. It's not in the best interest of this district, and I'm firmly against what you plan to do. They had their, they had 2 weeks, not a word. So why do we have to keep pandering? They don't deserve the respect that they think that they want. They, I don't know, you know, they, it's over as far as I'm concerned. As far as, you know, I don't know why you want to keep, you know, giving in. It's not going to be in the, it's not going to do us any good. It's bad. We know that. You read the letters. You read the memo. So I don't understand what you're doing. I just don't get it. It's not in, it's sitting here on this board with the responsibility of our people, and to have you guys, I don't understand it, but that's okay. So you just do it.
And I appreciate your position on that, and I'll just respectfully disagree that that it's not as black and white for me as it appears to be for you. And I completely respect that decision. I have a different a different thought process when it comes to that, and I have the also the.
You're in a city. You know, we're in Oceano here, so we're not a city. So we don't think, you know, we, our ratepayers pay their bills. And they
I would take offense to the fact that you're characterizing the city, the representatives of City Grover Beach as not paying our
bills. Oh, that's not what I meant at all. No, I'm saying of course you pay. No, that's not what I meant. I just meant that the city of Oceano can't absorb like the city of Grover Beach can, or Rio Grande. You guys are big cities.
That's a fair point. Is
what I'm saying.
The return on investment isn't as direct a path.
You know, we're called like a bedroom community, so our ratepayers have certain, a lot of them are in fixed incomes, elderly.
It's fair.
And so that's where I'm looking at, and why would, you know, when we know it's probably going to raise costs, so when we don't have to do it, it's not necessary to raise costs. Like a lot of times you say, well, we have to raise the rates because of this or that. This isn't necessary.
But we don't know that it's going to raise costs, and we, although there is logic there potentially, we don't know that, and that's part of the issue, is that there's nothing that proves it's either going to raise or lower or whatever, although it's reasonable to assume there's going to be some. We talked about that at the very first meeting.
Yeah.
And I also think your point of view coming from Oceano is fair. That it,
and what if we lose the USDA money from Oceano? Like
I mean that it's fair to say, let's say a construction worker from Oceano, it gets hired, and that's great, but where is that money going to go? Even if it's spent in Oceano, it's going to the county. It's not coming directly to your jurisdiction, and that's, you know, that's your supervisor that is your advocate there. And I do think that I want to respect your point of view that there is a fundamental difference there. However, I still think that there's that boomerang effect that is potentially really great, and that's, remember that some of this comes on the heels of Diablo Canyon's closure and that the loss of those jobs and those jobs within this very group of people. So I think that's an important context that we have to put this in. Let me rephrase. That's an important context that I put this in as I make this decision. Because I'm thinking not only as a board member for here, but I'm thinking as a representative of the community at large. So I want to be very respectful of Director Austin's concerns, but for me, I'm going 7 days, drop dead, come back. I'm not convinced we need a closed session at this point because. You know, again, being careful with what we're saying here, we don't have direction or language that has really been vetted by USDA yet. I think that's maybe a little soon. So I think we just say we've got this or we don't. We continue down the path with USDA, and we do that at, you know, that doesn't come without expense. So I say that we wait until we have that information and a little bit more direction before we do that. So I just want the answer now, and if you have any reason to call that meeting, then I don't know that we have to go into closed session right now. We don't have a threat. All we have is the letter that we all received 2 hours before here as a cautionary tale. And what do you think? Do you think it would be wise, Gil, to go right now into close, or not right now, but two weeks from now, or is that a little soon?
Okay. First off, I wasn't here at the last meeting, but my understanding is that there was an email that was received that constituted a threat of litigation. So that's totally the justification to hold a closed session if the board so desired. At this point, I'm not recommending a closed session, but I certainly would be available to answer questions that the memo generated on the letter and any potential exposure to the district, but I think it's fairly laid out in the memo.
So what you're saying is if we went into closed session two weeks from now, we would just kind of be reiterating what's in the memo?
We'd be able to answer your questions in depth on any issues. And you started having some questions on, you know, whether or not there was analysis done of the language, and that would be what we could get into, and you know, whether or not there's any exposure to the district.
Do you think that would be do you think that would be good timing at that time, or is that something you recommend doing?
Well, we can do it at any time. You can call a special meeting with 24 hours notice to discuss any issues that come up. This just gives us the opportunity to have a confidential, because before we had to do all our negotiations in public. And so now with this threat of litigation, the board does have as an option, an opportunity to discuss these issues in private with staff.
So I think my approach is still the one that I would advocate for, with slight modification, is that if we provide a hard and fast deadline, which whether there was an agreement or disagreement as to when the necessity for having a finalized agreement was in place, if we say to anyone wishing to enter the project labor agreement, we need a signed document returned to the district by the 14th.
By 5 p.m.
Close of business on the 14th.
Clearly, we have to be.
Yeah.
Yep. You have to say exactly. Close yeah. Somebody else's business might be a different time though.
Uh-huh. Right. Okay. So, how about if we even go further? We say a originally signed document in hand in the administrator's hand by the close of Sand District business on the 14th.
And you're saying there's no adjustments to what
with,
they were?
Correct, with no
adjustments. Corrections, no changes,
right.
No.
Yep, yeah, no adjustments to the contract. Yep. And then if district council and administrator feel the need to have a closed session, you can request that one be generated either on the 21st or at the board meeting. So, but I think for the purposes of direction this evening, so I guess that would be a motion to require a originally signed document by all participating parties in the district administrator's hand by close of business on August 14th.
I will second for purpose of discussion. I just have a clarifying question. Jeremy, is there any advantage to coming back in 2 weeks and approving or disapproving or whatever ahead of the September meeting in terms of keeping things on track, or does it make any difference?
Yeah, I think there would be advantages to making the decisions on the 21st rather than waiting to the 1st. Again, going back to being able to authorize MKN to begin that front-end document work.
So then would you be amenable to a friendly amendment to say that we are going to go ahead and schedule the special meeting if there is a yes to the answer?
I'd be amenable to that, yes. We have a motion and a second. Any further discussion? All in favor say aye. Aye.
Do we need a roll call?
Let's do a roll call, please.
Director Ray Russom?
Yes.
Director Lee?
Yes.
Director Austin?
No, with an explanation that I'm not going to compromise the financial stability of this district for the purpose of the PLA. I think it's wrong, so my vote is no.
Director Lee, and just for, may I enter into the record, close of business for the Sanitation District is 4:30 p.m., just so we can clarify that on the record.
Thank you, duly noted. So 4:30 p.m. on August 14th. Very good. Okay, so that concludes that item for this evening. So let's go back to item 6A, which is Central Coast Blue project update. Mr. Gent.
Good evening, Jeremy Gent, District Administrator. It's recommended that the board receive a presentation on Central Coast Blue, formerly referred to as the Regional Groundwater Sustainability Project, by Dan Heimel of Water Systems Consulting. He's going to walk you through an update on what's gone on over the past 6 to 12 months, and if you have questions, he'll be available to answer those. And so, Dan, I don't know if we want to take... Can you get started now, or do you need a few minutes to get set up?
No, I'm ready to go.
Should we maybe give just a second to let the people politely leave who don't want to disrupt the meeting?
let's go ahead and take a we'll come back at 7:15. Let's take a three-minute recess.
You know, there's a threat of litigation. Just tell us the threat of litigation.
Okay, we will go ahead and call back to order this meeting of the South Sand District and proceed back. And we are back in open session. So we are now proceeding back to item 6A, which is a update on the Central Coast Blue project. So, Mr. Gent, did you want to make introductions, please? Again.
Yeah, yes. Good evening. Jeremy Gent, District Administrator. With me here is Dan Heimel. Dan Heimel is an engineer with Water Systems Consulting, and they have been the lead consultant on the Central Coast Blue Project in conjunction with the City of Pismo Beach, which Ben Fine, the Public Works Director from Pismo, is in the audience this evening to see Dan's update as well. And so just as another note, a similar version of this presentation will be making its rounds to the various councils, including your councils and the City of Pismo Beach over between now and September 3rd, I think, is the last last outreach meeting of this nature. So with that, I'll turn it over to Dan. Board, feel free to ask questions as they come up. If there's technical questions you'd like Dan to answer, I've informed Dan that he can defer if it's going to be covered later, or if he wants to take that at the end, he can request to do so. But it may be beneficial just to answer the question right then. So with that, here you go, Dan.
Thanks, Jeremy.
God bless you.
Chair Lee, Vice Chair Ray Russom, Director Austin, thanks for the opportunity to provide this update on Central Coast Blue. I want to start off with just a brief overview of my presentation. We'll initially start with why Central Coast Blue? Why do we need this project? And then I'll move into a project status update you on the different elements associated with Central Coast Blue. Then we'll give an overview of the proposed cost-benefit sharing framework that's currently being evaluated for this project, go into next steps, and then finally end with a project schedule. So why Central Coast Blue? As you board members are all well aware, you know, recent historic droughts have highlighted vulnerabilities in the Five Cities region's water supply portfolio. And that portfolio is primarily made up with three sources: state water, Lopez water, or local surface water, and groundwater from the Santa Maria groundwater basin. It might be easier to see if we could dim the lights. We had talked about that. Great.
That's better. Yeah. I like that.
Let me know. Okay. I'll turn it back.
So the State Water Project water is highly variable, and the amounts of water available year over year can vary significantly during prolonged droughts. The greatest example of this was in 2014, sort of in the middle of this last drought, where there was a 5% allocation of State Water Project water from DWR. This is a graph just showing the variability of the amount of State Water Project water available year over year. Lopez Reservoir has additionally exhibited significant declines over the last 50 years. This is a graph, there's quite a bit going on here, but I'll try to walk you through it, showing inflow with these stepped bars, as well as lake storage in this lighter blue line. And then what I've added in here is a moving average. And what we've seen is that over the last 40 years, that moving average has declined by approximately 40,000 acre foot for inflow. And just an indicator that we're seeing less and less local surface water available from Lopez Reservoir.
I see. It says 4,000 there, but you just said 40,000, and it looks like 40.
It should be 4,000.
Oh, 4,000 or 40?
4,000 okay. Acre feet decline on average. And then our local groundwater supplies have been additionally impacted by droughts. Going back to as far as the 1970s, the DWR report identified potential seawater intrusion in the northern cities management area of the Santa Maria groundwater basin. Just for clarification for this group, the Northern Cities Management Area represents the northern portion of the Santa Maria Groundwater Basin. It's the portion of the basin that the cities Arroyo Grande, Grover Beach, Pismo Beach, for a portion of its service area, and the Oceano Community Services District overlie, along with the Cienega Valley. And more recently, we've seen seawater intrusion in two of the Century monitoring wells here in Oceano in 2009. And these monitoring wells are the primary tool that the Northern Cities Management Area, or NCMA agencies, those four water purveyors I just described, utilize to detect and warn against seawater intrusion. With the detection of seawater intrusion in 2009, the NCMA agencies identified the need to better understand the groundwater basin. And so they set out to develop a groundwater model. This is just a couple of graphics showing the individual well log information on the left, that was utilized to create the lithological model that ultimately flowed into the groundwater model.
Wait, go backwards. I have no idea what that slide is showing us. Can you use less smaller words than lithological and help me understand what we're seeing on the left and what we're seeing on the right?
Yeah, definitely. So on the left, what we're seeing are 3D sort of representations of a well log. And so when a well is drilled, they characterize the geology of the borehole, or the hole that's drilled into the ground, and then they retain that information for it because it's valuable information to understand what the geology is under the ground.
So each one of those lines represents a depth of a well that hits the water table?
It represents the depth of the hole that was drilled when that well was constructed.
Okay.
And it's a little hard to see here, but there each of those lines also has their different gradations or colors as it goes down, and that represents the type of material that... Oops.
Soil characteristics.
So on the right, how do those vertical lines translate into that yellow graph or graphic?
What we have on the left is obviously limited information because we've only drilled wells in certain areas. And so they extrapolate that information to create a comprehensive 3D model of the geology here in the Santa Maria groundwater basin. And that's what that image on the right represents.
So is the thickness... What is that? I mean, there's all kinds of things going on there. I don't understand.
So really what we're looking at here, so this is, that image on the right represents, so the upper part of that is the ground surface here in the Santa Maria groundwater basin.
Okay.
Then the thickness represents the depth of the aquifer.
Okay.
Or the basin that is produced. And then the different colors represent the type of material that we predict resides within that portion of the basin.
And there's some striping there. What is that? Going up and down?
I think the way that model is constructed is it's a series of cells.
Oh, okay.
And so it's not a completely smooth border.
Got it.
And so the left side of that model is actually the ocean, just for geographic reference. And for your benefit, so the model that was created includes the Northern Cities Management Area, the Nimpomo Mesa Management Area, and the portion of the Santa Maria Valley Management Area that resides within Slo County. So the southern or sort of southwestern border represents, that's the Santa Maria River.
So it's basically where that cliff is.
Yep.
Is showing that. Okay,
yeah.
Got it. Thank you. Good luck with that at the other jurisdictions.
Yeah. Maybe I'll swap that slide out.
Good thinking.
Yeah, you guys are the guinea pigs, I guess, for this presentation, so I appreciate the input. So the groundwater model identified pathways for seawater intrusion in the lower Paso Robles and upper Carriaga formations. And those are these formations pointed at with these two arrows here. And these happen to be the same portions of the aquifer that the municipal agencies rely upon for much of their groundwater from their municipal production wells. Additionally, of note, the calibrated model predicted onshore subsurface flow, or flow from the ocean towards the land in these layers at the same time that the seawater intrusion was detected in 2009.
Let me ask you a question with respect to that. So seawater intrusion indicated 2009. Worst part of the drought, 2014. So why was seawater intrusion only encountered in 2009? Not that that's necessarily germane to why we're considering Central Coast Blue, but if 5 years later there was no seawater intrusion at the height of the drought, so what's the difference?
Yeah, no, it's a good question. So So there was a drought preceding 2009, and the biggest difference that we can tell looking at the available data we have was there was significantly more municipal pumping in the period of time leading up to 2009. The NCMA agencies were pumping roughly around 3,000 acre feet per year. Seawater intrusion was detected in 2009. After that event, there was a concerted effort by the NCMA agencies to reduce their groundwater pumping in an effort to prevent further degradation of the basin. And so the big difference between the drought preceding 2009 and the detection of seawater intrusion at that point, and then the drought that followed depending on the metrics, was a worse drought, was the reduction in municipal pumping. And that's largely been attributed to by the NCMA technical group for the lack of further detections with this more recent drought. So general findings from the groundwater model were that during periods of extended drought, the NCMA agency's ability to pump groundwater is limited due to the threat of seawater intrusion. And to better understand this, a water supply / demand evaluation tool was developed to help the agencies evaluate the need for improved water supply reliability in extended droughts. And this tool incorporated potential drought impacts not only on the groundwater supply but also state and Lopez supplies. It also accounted for potential reductions in demand associated with water conservation. The NCMA agencies were able to achieve significant demand reductions throughout this last drought, and then it also accounted for future growth. And one of the primary output from this tool are these graphs, and this is just a representative graph. It's not data from any individual agency, but it's a tool set that has been utilized by the NCMA agencies to better understand their water supply reliability during droughts. And so I'll walk you through what this chart shows. So the colored columns, represent the different water supply sources for the region and for a specific agency. The horizontal lines represent their estimated demand. And then the different columns represent the available water under different drought scenarios. So as you move to the right, you'll notice that the columns get shorter, and that's because it's estimated that under longer and extended droughts, the amount of water from each of the supply sources will be diminished. And what this analysis was intended to determine is, do we have enough water during these extended drought periods, or do we need more reliable or supplemental water so that the agencies can continue to serve water to their customers in future drought conditions? And so one of the things to note here is that in this example, the multiple dry year and the minimum supply columns on the right, we're seeing a deficit between the amount of available supply and the projected demand, as shown in the horizontal lines.
And so the blue SMGB, what's that stand for?
That would be groundwater, Santa Maria.
Okay,
so that's
groundwater. So then the top khaki is state water. The bottom lighter khaki is Lopez.
Yeah.
Okay.
The contrast is much greater on my screen. Not very helpful for you.
It's just a hypothetical.
Okay. Yeah.
Aaron, you're not on the mic.
And the other part of this analysis is what would be needed to fill that gap. And so recycled water was identified as a supplemental supply source that could be utilized to fill that gap. And so as you see, in this hypothetical scenario, as you add the recycled water, now we've eliminated that deficiency, and there's a reliable supply of water in a future extended drought scenario. And there's been a number of studies associated with recycled water, and I won't go into all the history of it, but to this point, Central Coast Blue, or as I'll describe more about the project, has been identified as that preferred recycled water solution to address the threat of seawater intrusion. It will allow for the capture of a water source that is currently wasted to the ocean and utilize that to protect the groundwater basin and improve water supply reliability. So this figure here shows the current wastewater treatment process and disposal technique. So both the City of Pismo Beach and the South San Luis County Sanitation District's wastewater plants treat to secondary standards, and then that water is disposed to the ocean. Central Coast Blue would add additional treatment steps, advanced water treatment, which would include three different technologies: microfiltration, reverse osmosis, and ultraviolet disinfection slash advanced oxidation. These technologies would allow the water to be treated to sufficient quality that it could be injected into the groundwater basin, where it would reside for a period of several months to years before it would be pumped out using existing municipal production wells and served to the community. In addition to providing additional groundwater recharge, the water injected from Central Coast Blue would also be utilized to develop a seawater intrusion barrier. So this is a cross-section schematic of what a seawater intrusion barrier would look like. Again, advanced treated water delivered to injection wells injected along the coastline to create a barrier or a ridge of fresh water that would prevent seawater from intruding into the basin and contaminating the more inland municipal production wells. Central Coast Blue would leverage existing infrastructure that connects the Pismo Beach and South San Luis County wastewater treatment plants. There's currently a pipeline that connects both facilities, which the board is, I'm sure, aware of. And it's Central Coast Blue is a regional project that's envisioned to be completed in two phases. The first phase would include capture and treatment of water from Pismo's wastewater treatment plant. And then phase two would include capture and treatment of water from South San Luis County's wastewater treatment plant. That water, once captured and treated, would then, as described, be injected into a series of wells located along the coastline. And here's a figure that highlights what that injection well network would look like. So these two wells, these are the wells where seawater intrusion was detected in 2009. These are the locations of the existing municipal production wells for the NCMA agencies. And this is the orientation of the injection wells proposed for Central Coast Blue. For phase one, five wells are envisioned, injecting 1,100 acre feet per year to reduce the threat of seawater intrusion. Phase two would include construction of two new wells and injection of approximately 3,000 to 4,000 acre feet per year. One of the other findings of the supply-demand analysis, those were those columns and line graphs I showed earlier, was that phase one may likely provide sufficient water reliability in the near term, in that it could address those supply deficits during prolonged droughts, and that the implementation of phase two may not be needed for some time. And the factors associated with the implementation of phase two are listed here. Potential climate change impacts on local or statewide hydrology, resiliency of other water supply sources, potential agricultural interests in supplemental water, the ability to transfer or sell surplus water to other water purveyors when available, effectiveness of phase one at preventing seawater intrusion, and then future water demand for participating or neighboring agencies. So that's sort of that was why Central Coast Blue. Now I'll transition to the project update. So what we have here, this is a simplified schematic schedule for Central Coast Blue. Right now, Central Coast Blue is transitioning from preliminary engineering to the environmental and permitting phase. So shown in the vertical line, that orange line, that's where we are today, where we've been working on preliminary engineering for most of 2019, and then looking to move into the EIR, land use and regulatory agency permitting phases, as well as initiating final design, targeting in early 2020. After those phases, the project will progress to funding and financing. I think similar to some of the conversations we had earlier, funding and financing ends up on the critical path for a number of projects these days, either USDA or state revolving fund. But then targeting bidding and construction in 2022.
That would be for phase one?
That'd be for phase one.
Okay.
One of the critical components for Central Coast Blue is siting of the advanced treatment facility. The project team is evaluating both an on-site, and when I say on-site, I'm referring to siting at the South San Luis County Sanitation District site, and an off-site alternative for the advanced water treatment facility. This is the figure on the right shows areas that have been highlighted for potentially siting the advanced treatment facility. The criteria for these locations were outside the coastal zone and outside the floodplain, but still in close proximity to the existing infrastructure associated with Pismo Beach and South San Luis County wastewater treatment plants. For reference, just so you can orientate yourself, area G1 in the middle, that's the Okui Strawberry Farm. So the areas being targeted are located in southwest Grover Beach and northwest Oceano, east of Highway 1 and east of the railroad tracks. Both alternatives, an on-site and off-site location, will be evaluated as co-equal within the EIR, and Pismo Beach has entered into a purchase agreement for a potential off-site location in Grover Beach is the current update for the off-site search. Another component of the preliminary engineering has been the development of updated project cost estimates to help inform funding and financing evaluations. These project cost estimates are at this point only for the on-site alternative, the South San Luis County alternative. And it should be noted that, you know, at these cost estimates will likely change as the project evolves, and so therefore they're presented as a range of costs. And that range has an estimated accuracy of minus 20 to plus 30 based on the best available information we have from actual project costs from other similar projects. And so for phase one, this is a table summarizing the current cost estimates. The capital cost for the treatment facility is estimated to range between 17 and 31 million. The distributed infrastructure, that would be your pipelines and your injection wells, between 11 and 19 million. Total capital cost somewhere between 28 and 50 million, translating to an annual capital payment of 1.8 to 3.2 million, combined with an O&M, equates to a total annual cost of 3.6 to 5.5 million. Then you compare that to the amount of water anticipated to be produced and recovered, and we get a unit cost or dollars per acre foot ranging somewhere between $2,300 and $4,900 per acre foot. Couple things to point out here on this. The phase one costs shown in this table include costs associated with upsizing the facility for a future phase two. So the pipelines to the facility are sized for phase two. The storage facilities, the building that houses the process equipment, all would be sized for phase two, but also that places it a higher burden on the phase one cost. That strategy could be reevaluated as the design process progresses. The other component to note, these costs don't assume any grant funding, which we'll talk about in a little bit, and assume 5% financing over 30 years. We have a similar table for phase two. To point out here, first off, the cost shown in here, the total capital cost, 50 to 80 million approximately, represent the cumulative costs. So they include the cost for phase one, so they're not additive. We don't add the cost from the previous slide to this slide to get to phase two. This would be the total cost to construct the full project at a phase two capacity. Other components of note here, obviously the amount of purified water produced increases significantly, around 4,000. Acre feet, and the unit cost comes down significantly as well for two reasons. One, economies of scale associated with a larger project, and two, a lot of that infrastructure was built in phase one and sized for phase two, so there's a less of a delta increase in cost when you transition to phase two under the proposed concepts here. Next, I'll cover the proposed cost-benefit sharing framework currently being evaluated by the participating agencies. Just quickly to highlight that interagency collaboration has been key to the project's success to date. F5 again.
Mr. AGP, gentlemen.
I mean, I can navigate back, but whatever we did last time worked well. Oh, well, it didn't work this. City of Pismo Beach and the Sand District have agreed to split the cost of the EIR 50-50. The groundwater model was funded through a combination of funds, both directly and indirectly, from Pismo Beach, the County of SLO, the Sand District, and the local regional board. And then preliminary engineering cost sharing has been split between Pismo Beach, Grover Beach, and the City of Aurora Grande. So the funding sources that are currently under evaluation for Central Coast Blue, water rates and wastewater rates are the two sources being evaluated, and potentially a cost split between the water and wastewater agencies. I guess, and I spoke at it. There's additionally a third funding source that's being looked at, and that's grant low-interest financing to bring in outside funding for the project to reduce the cost to water and wastewater customers. The specific framework for the water-wastewater cost share is being discussed, is looking to tie the cost to the current or future benefits that the project provides both the water and wastewater agencies or funds. So the water benefits of the project, seawater intrusion protection, increased groundwater recharge, improved water quality, overall improved water resource reliability. The wastewater benefit being evaluated is potential preparation for future legislative or regulatory requirements to reduce ocean and or bay discharges. So there's a framework that's been developed to help split the cost between water and wastewater, and that's what these series of pie charts is going to illustrate. So as we talked about this side, we're going to tie it to benefits. So the split between water and wastewater is envisioned to be based on the benefits to wastewater. So this would be theoretically a wastewater component.
So, Dan, can you tell us, I mean, are we seeing Grover Beach on the far left black, and then is Oceano the green?
Yes.
And
yes,
Pismo Beach water, okay, wastewater, and then Aurora Grande?
Yep.
Okay.
And this is another one of those hypothetical graphs.
You definitely, on the slides coming forward to the next one, the graphic, the words just have to be bigger.
Yeah. And so the wastewater component, it is not just the Sand District, because the City of Pismo Beach also owns and operates a wastewater treatment facility. And so there's proposed cost split between water and wastewater, illustrated with this pie chart. Then that wastewater split would be further split between South San Luis County Sand and the Pismo Wastewater Fund. And that split is envisioned to potentially be based on flow rate, how much flow is contributed to the outfall. And then the remaining costs for the project for the water agencies is proposed to be split based on groundwater allocation, which is how the NCMA agencies currently cost share for groundwater-related initiatives. And again, this is a framework that's being evaluated by the staff and ultimately will be brought to the boards of these individual agencies. Trying to translate that into a number that's a little more relatable to the general public, we've put together this initial cost estimate for rate impacts. And so this is an estimated rate increase for an NCMA household. So not trying to tie it to a water or sewer rate, but just on a household level, a very high level. And the current estimate based on the cost estimate shown on the previous slide would be a rate increase of potentially $16 to $25 per month per household. Now, obviously, an individual's rate increase would vary depending on that water-wastewater split and the water split amongst the water agencies, but just sort of on aggregate level, this is an estimate of potential rate increase. As I mentioned before, the other funding source is outside grant or low-interest financing funding. The project has been very successful in pursuing and in obtaining grant funding to date. Through the Prop 1 groundwater grant program, the project was awarded $2 million to assist in planning activities, and those are currently underway. Additionally, Central Coast Blue will be applying for implementation funding through the Prop 1 groundwater grant program in round three. That implementation funding could provide up to 50% of the implementation or the capital cost for the project, up to $50 million, I believe is the cap, but that's higher than 50% of these project costs, but still a significant opportunity to get outside funding for this project. And that funding opportunity really is a key schedule driver, as the funding agencies want to see progress from the planning grant to the implementation grant. The other grant funding source is Title 16 from the Bureau of Reclamation. The project has received a preliminary award of $800,000 in planning grant funds to support the final design and program management and value engineering. And also, the project is eligible to apply for implementation funding in future rounds of Title 16. And could additionally receive an additional 25% of implementation funding. So next steps, just want to highlight some of the upcoming critical stakeholder agency decision points that will be brought back to this and the other governing boards. One of the first ones is the cost-sharing frameworks and agreements. So taking those pie charts to actual specific agency participation percentages in the capital and O&M costs associated with the project. Other items coming back will be a governance structure, who will own, operate, maintain Central Coast Blue, water and wastewater rate increases associated with the project, and then finally mechanisms to reconcile costs paid to date to the level of participation in the project. Speaking quickly to the project schedule, there are a number of schedule drivers, the largest being improved water resource reliability. But as I mentioned before, there are several funding opportunities in the near term that are driving the schedule and pushing the need to develop cost-sharing agreements, a full funding plan, and to move forward with the environmental review. And then again, here's just a high-level overview schedule for the project as we sit today. 2018, focused groundwater modeling, preliminary design, technology piloting. 2019, again, additional preliminary design, transitioning to environmental review. 2020, 2021 will be focused on final design, permitting, funding and financing, and then construction kickoff in 2022 and completion early 2024. So that's the presentation I have for you today. So open it back up to the board for questions.
Great. Thank you, Dan, for that presentation. So let's see. Who wants to go first? Linda?
The site in Grover Beach, would that mean originally it was thought it would be built at the sanitation plant site? Does that mean there won't be anything built at the sanitation plant site, or there will just be a small?
The sanitation plant site is still one of the alternatives being evaluated. And so the approach would be to take both alternatives through the EIR as co-equals, and then ultimately evaluate all the pros and cons associated with the two alternatives before selecting a final site.
The other site that was up above G2, where was that? I didn't get... you had the strawberries and then...
G2, it's likely in southwest Grover Beach, north of the Cooey Strawberry Farms.
Yeah, I would think that was would be our industrial zone.
Okay. So was that a site for you to actually build the whole thing to?
There are
an alternative site?
A number of properties in that area that could suffice. We're targeting, at this point, a minimum of 1.5 acres, so... some of the smaller properties aren't large enough, and there's a bit of real estate pressure in that area right now that's making it difficult to identify sites. But yeah, that's generally targeting that area. Plus, there's an area in Oceano that would work well also.
Yeah, and that real estate pressure. There's also several projects that have been approved for construction in that area.
Yeah,
that's all I had to ask. Thank you very much.
Questions?
Yeah, several. On that same thing, you said Pismo was under contract in a particular place. Can you show on that map which one of those it was?
Yeah, the map's a little zoomed out, but we can try to do our best. Pismo was entered in, and Ben, maybe you can... clarify on the specifics, but entered into a purchase agreement with one of the property owners.
And so maybe this is best asked to Mr. Fine. So if you're under contract, is that the one we're focusing on, or I'm confused as to how that plays in here?
Really, the preferred site.
Thank you for being here.
Absolutely. Honorable Board, thank you for allowing me to speak. The preferred alternative is a site that's located outside of the floodplain and outside of the coastal zone. As we look at different options, we found a parcel that fits our needs in the city of Grover Beach. We met with the community development director and the director of public works to find out if this is a viable site in Grover Beach's future development plans and their general plan and such, and it is. A viable site. We did enter into a purchase agreement with the property owner, and we are doing our due diligence. Currently, there is a tow yard located on that site, and so we're doing a environmental assessment of the site to make sure that there's no contamination and that we could actually successfully move the project forward at a minimal cost. If there's high contamination on the site due to the previous use or the current use, it would make the site less viable.
So if you're successful in that, in completing that purchase, then that would identify that second site, and all this area G3 and G2 and all that would just sort of fade away and we'd concentrate on the one? Or is this for only Pismo's use?
No, this would be for Central Coast Blue as an option. We don't have a particular site. This is the site that'll be determined through the EIR process. But it is an available site that meets the needs, and so we are investigating it.
Okay. And so my question, I guess, is will there be a potentially a third site or a fourth site that would be identified, all as co-equal sites?
There could be. There's a site in Aurora Grande that may be evaluated as well that the city currently owns.
And then I'm not understanding the coloring or the... I understand what the shapes are. They're the plat.
Yeah, the coloring really has...
Why are they identified the way they're identified?
It's just they were attempted to be grouped. There's really no significance associated with the coloring. It's not order of priority.
So in area G2, or C, I can't see that, there are multiple... You don't need that whole thing.
No.
Multiple properties within that zone.
Yeah, they were just grouped as the G2 properties and the... property acquisition consultant that just colored those properties similarly, just for, I think, ease of categorizing them.
And are they labeled in order of priority so that G1 would be the best alternative in Grover?
No.
You know, in order of G1, G2, G3?
No, it doesn't necessarily imply a ranking.
Okay. And then can you go to the timing slide, the one with the flow chart?
The last slide? The first schedule slide?
The one that has the box, the one for dummies. The one that's just got the years on it with the squares, with the little graphic that kind of slides from one to the next one. That one. This is only for phase one, correct?
Correct.
So if we were to extend that out for potentially phase two, what would that timing look like?
You know, the implementation of phase two, I think, is really tied to a number of other factors, not necessarily in the critical path schedule for implementing a public works project. You know, if the agencies wanted to move forward with phase two, there's obviously improvements being made at the South San Luis County Wastewater Treatment Plant. I think it's envisioned that phase two wouldn't be implemented until those improvements are completed.
So it's kind of dependent on even which site we choose and all of that?
It is.
Okay.
Yeah, though one of the criteria for the sites being identified is that it would have sufficient room to accommodate phase two.
So you mentioned that the cost of phase one could be adjusted based on whether there was a reasonable expectation of going forward with phase two. If the communities were to choose to just simply go through constructing for phase one, how would that affect that number?
Likely that number would go down.
How much? Are we talking 10%, 30%? What?
Yeah, we haven't done that analysis, but I would say somewhere in the range of 10 to 20% potentially.
Okay. And then you showed that per month cost, which is roughly $200 a household per year, which is not an insignificant cost, especially, I'm not speaking for Oceano, but, you know, for our disadvantaged communities and households. I assume that it's just a multiplier if we go to phase two, that would become, you know, adding the funding on for phase two would be another $200 or $300 a year. Is that correct? Is my logic right?
I think you're in the ballpark. I think transitioning to phase two, you know, the capital costs approximately doubles, the O&M costs approximately doubles. Potentially even higher, just because you're treating more water. But the benefit, it increases quite a bit more than double, three or four times, because you're treating and injecting a much higher volume of water.
Thank you. So. And my last question is for the district administrator. So in going to the cost sharing, and I don't want to ask any questions that are really germane to the cities, because we'll get that opportunity at another time. But in terms of the cost sharing and the benefits to the wastewater treatment plant and the decisions that we make as directors, what's your take on how we fit into that and the level of agreement, acceptance? I don't know what the right word is in what's being presented tonight from the point of view of the Sand District.
So I think the... The effort tonight has done a good job at explaining kind of what's before us and what we need to figure out. Now, as far as what the district's contribution could be and what that makeup will eventually be negotiated to be is where the challenge lies. We've looked at other examples. There's maybe a dozen or so of these types of projects throughout the state. And so some of them are a little bit ahead of us. Some of them have been in operation for several years. And so we can gather good information from that. And there's not really examples where sanitation districts contribute large amounts to these type of projects. That being said, we're working as a region. We want to collaborate regionally here. We certainly have the ability to alter the way that we treat the waste. We have the ability and the authority to spend money on these type of projects. The Health and Safety Code allows sanitation districts to spend money on water recycling projects. So that's all. So I think the negotiation has to come back to what's the benefit to the district. One of the early things we were somewhat tracking on was there was a proposed legislation. It was called the Hertzberg Bill, And the Hertzberg bill was going to require that by 2030 that dischargers with ocean outfalls would have to reduce their ocean outfall by 50%. And recently that fell out of committee. And that was kind of, a good nexus and a good indicator that the district had some ability to mitigate future risk by participating in the project, because it would allow us to achieve that future-proofing, if you will, of providing recycling to our ocean outfall water and meet the letter of the Hertzberg bill. It's likely that type of legislation will continue to pop up as as California faces its water crunch and continued growth in water crunch. And so this is a source of water that's reliable during the worst droughts. And that's probably the key takeaway. You know, we're not, when we're looking at the dollar amounts at $4,900 an acre foot at the high end range of this water, it's not equal to state water. It's not equal to Lopez water, because those water sources can be restricted or even go to zero during a drought. And this water, that would not be the case with Central Coast Blue Water. That water would be very reliable and only subject to minor decreases through conservation during periods of extended drought. So it really lies into that it's going to have to be negotiated, is what we've kind of come to terms with, is the district's contribution will have to be negotiated through a process on what is the benefit to the district. If we potentially go beyond what the direct benefit is, then we're in a position where now the district is a water wholesaler and we're just going to be charging, because we have a responsibility to try to recoup revenue where we can. If we produce a product as a district and we provide that product, we would want to recapture revenue to the extent that it was available. So if we take a larger role, and that's not off the table either, but if we take a larger role, then we're just kind of circling the money around, and actually we would be charging the member agencies for injecting that water back in the ground, and that would be, we would have our ratepayers, and an additional ratepayer would be the water purveyors, would be paying into a fund for the sanitation district. And so that's really informing the governance and the cost benefit sharing, what the exercise that's coming forward now as we get buy-in and see that this is a viable project to move forward. We'll need to make those decisions on, whether the district has a 5, 10, 20, 30% stake in this project.
And just briefly, is there any difference to benefit to the district based on location of phase one and two?
So the benefit to the district, and this is not having, there is a benefit by not having it on the sanitation district site. And that was, one of the precipitators to get more in-depth information on alternative sites, because as most of you are aware, the district is actually under a threat of potentially relocating the entire plant, and the potential's there over the next 10, 20, 30 years that we could be hit by the Coastal Commission to relocate the plant. So if we build more infrastructure on our site, that's just more that we have to relocate in the future. From the district standpoint, the property is available. It's a site that could be utilized for Central Coast Blue, but it's tough to make a case where the district would make any financial contribution to that site. And in fact, it may be contradictory for us to spend further money, but just based on the language in our coastal development permit that we have, that it says that you shall not expend further funds except for the essential operation of the facility.
So then reversing that logic, is there a reciprocal gain and benefit if there is an alternative site that could potentially co-host a relocation of the sanitation district?
Yes, there would be, and there's been minor conversations about that. The issue with that is the acreage component of trying to accomplish that now on the near term. It is a discussion that we've had in some of our meetings, but you know, we would be likely looking at, instead of a 1.5 acre site, as Dan has referred to this evening, a 6 or 7 acre site to future-proof for potential relocation.
If I was a poker player, which I am, you did not have aces and kings or anything like that in that response of do you like this agreement as it stands right now. So what I'm hearing you say is really that there's a lot more work to be done in terms of how the wastewater, how sanitation district fits into the governance and the profit sharing, cost sharing.
Correct. The challenge is clearly, there is a clear benefit to the water purveyors. The benefit to sanitation is much more elusive. And so that's the challenge.
Okay, thank you very much. That's my question.
Great, thanks. So my questions are kind of going to go in a similar vein. So if I understood the presentation correctly, Dan, phase one creates about 1,100 acre feet. Okay, and the focus of that 1,100 acre feet at this point is to prevent or slow seawater intrusion. Okay, so the benefits to the project are not so much in the water portfolio realm of the discussion of increasing yield out of the groundwater. The first phase is seawater intrusion protection.
I would say that it's both, in that so you're creating a seawater intrusion barrier, and that will allow you to pump more municipal groundwater without inducing further seawater intrusion into the basin.
Okay, so there is
a yield benefit.
So the operational changes that all of the communities have made in their municipal pumping could be go back to their 2009 methods, so versus what's being used right now. So
yeah, since 2009, the agency's just on average has been pumping about 1,000 acre feet combined, you know, all four agencies. And so with the implementation of phase one, during these extended drought periods, that pumping, the modeling has shown that municipal pumping could be increased to 2,500 or somewhere in that ballpark.
Okay. So in your cost estimates, the commodity that the sand district creates, shall we say, was that a free cost to Central Coast Blue, or was there a cost for the discharge water?
If I'm understanding you correctly, all the costs, you know, associated with the advanced treatment and the pump station pipelines and the injection wells are included in those cost estimates. And there's no costs being, other than, I guess, land provided by the district in those cost estimates.
Okay, so if
the, not if the, included.
Okay, so if the district was to, so the district ultimately has to make a decision whether we're going to give the water to Central Coast Blue for free or as a commodity that we've created and is getting paid for.
Yeah, we didn't factor any sort of value in the wastewater into those costs. So there's no sort of revenue from, I guess, the water or the project 8 participating agencies to the district for the water itself.
Okay.
Nor for the city of Pismo Beach either in those scenarios.
Right, in that scenario, because they provide seed water as well, for lack of a better term. So, okay. So from a water reclamation decision-making tree, we've got somewhere between $2,100 and $4,500 an acre foot, depending upon phase one, phase two. So now, how does that compare, or has there been comparisons, or maybe this is part of the EIR with respect to other water portfolio, desalination, cloud seeding, enhanced conservation. Where does Central Coast Blue fit into that model? And so what is, from at this point in the decision-making tree, why is this the chosen methodology, or where does the discussion happen where we're going to say Central Coast Blue, you are the choice? Or is it Central Coast Blue, you're the choice for this? DSAL, you're a choice for this? Cloud seeding, hopefully you'll happen or not happen. So when, has that decision already been made? Or is this, and perhaps this is a question for Mr. Fine, is Central Coast Blue was the pilot project that's moving forward, but now we're going down a path where there's no other options? Is that, I'm assuming that's not correct.
Can I ask an easier version of this question?
Yes, please.
How much does DSAL cost compared to phase one and phase two?
DSAL cost estimates have ranged in similar price ranges, I would say, and I don't have those numbers on the top of my head today, but they're in the $2,000 to $4,000 an acre foot. It all depends on which DSAL project, how much existing infrastructure can you leverage, how far are you pumping the water. So
I have a crystal ball right here, and mm-hmm. I have a feeling you're going to be asked that same question in not very long from now in Arroyo Grande, so you might just be ready for that.
And ultimately, to add on to that question, which I wasn't going to ask here because you had mentioned, each community has a groundwater pumping cost as well. Mm-hmm. And so there's going to be a balance against that as well. So be prepared for that question in probably each of the communities, because it's not a cost here, but it is going to be a balance there. So, Mr. Fine, I referenced you, and my long-winded question, which got simplified, your answer.
Absolutely. So the City of Pismo Beach did a recycled water facilities planning study, and that study analyzed several different sources of water, including purchasing additional state water, raising the Lopez Dam spillway, desalination, and recycled water was basically what was studied. And what the outcome of that study was is that recycled water was the, if you looked at a cost benefit, it was the best choice. Raising the spillway at Lopez was cheaper, but the problem there is
we haven't spilled,
exactly. So there's no benefit. There's a cost, but no benefit. Later, the City of Arroyo Grande, in conjunction with the district, I believe, did a very similar study, and the outcome of that study was the same, that recycled water was the best way forward. So other options were already analyzed, and by two different independent studies, and both of those studies pointed towards, and that's how we really ended up with this regional project. Once the City of Pismo Beach finished our recycled water facilities planning study, we moved forward with a recycled water project. The second project done by the City of Rio Grande and the district was done shortly thereafter, and when it came to the same conclusion, everybody said, stop, this is stupid to do two separate projects. We should really do one regional project and move forward together as a team, and that's how the Regional Groundwater Sustainability Project, which is now Central Coast Blue, was born.
Can you remind me how long ago those studies were done?
2012.
Okay, so they're coming up on their lifespan right now. Can you maybe, as we come forward to our jurisdictions later, in the front end of your presentation, maybe present some of that front end information about how we got to even the recycled water project? I think that would be really helpful.
Yeah, definitely.
Thank you.
Okay, I think those are my questions for the moment. I think my colleagues that I have asked some good questions as well.
Okay.
Anything else before we go out to the public? If not, we'll go ahead and open this up to the public, see if there's any members of the public that want to speak on this item.
Good evening again. I'm Julie Tacker, and my first question would be to Dan, through the chair. Can you make sure that your PowerPoint is available in a very short order? I had a really hard time getting it from your water board presentation. That took me a whole lot longer than it probably should have. Probably not your fault. Nobody's fault. I just would like to get to it soon. Your early description of seawater intrusion and the monitoring that was found in 2009 identifies the two wells in Oceano. And I have this question that I haven't asked before. If seawater intrusion was found at the depot monitoring station, why does Oceano pump from the ground across the street at well 8? when if there's a real threat, that's not where you pump, next to the monitoring well. So maybe someday come back with that, or when you go to the other agencies, incorporate it into your presentation. When I look at numbers, $16 to $25 a month for a household, and then I say, okay, if I had that same money and I applied it to some different projects, Jeff was kind of on track with better conservation, raising the dam, those kinds of things. Because I have studied Oceano still doesn't have a mandatory retrofit program. I've been to restaurants in Grover Beach where the toilets are giant, holding water. So if that money was available from your ratepayers, you would put it in the low-lying fruit of conservation, so that there's less money, less water to be talking about to recycle, and downsizing everything, because less water is being used, less pumping is being done. All of that is a domino effect. So I'm not inspired with Central Coast Blue. The idea of putting anything else at the sanitation district is obscene. The rhetoric from the Coastal Commission and the Water Board is getting louder and louder and louder that infrastructure needs to be protected and you don't put any more in harm's way of sea level rise. And last thing, Jeff, the O&M costs for this, I can't imagine that you have thought to include the continuing cost of pumping groundwater away from your facilities, because the sea level and the groundwater are rising and they're going to put pressure on the very expensive infrastructure that you put in place. Thank you.
Thank you for those comments. Is there anyone else that wants to come forward and speak on this item? Seeing no one else come forward.
Ben Fine, Pismo Beach. In the mid-80s to late 80s, the city of Pismo Beach embarked on state water. At the time, many people said, this is ludicrous. The cost of this water is insane. We can't afford this. What are we doing? Without that resource today, the city would be in trouble. As we look towards the future, and we look towards how do we protect water supply for future generations, 10, 15, 20, 30 years from now, those generations will look back at us, at you, and say, I am so grateful that these people had the foresight to do a project like Central Coast Blue to protect our natural resource. I'm sure all of you, you know your own agency's water situations, and you experienced a drought. One of our agencies in the NCMA was 1 year away from running out of water. It's a very real fact. We need to do something for the future generations. Central Coast Blue isn't necessarily for us right now today. It will help our situation. But as we look towards the future and towards future generations, this project makes sense to protect for our children, for their children, and their children, to protect the sustainability of this natural resource. Thank you.
Thank you for those comments. So anyone else want to come forward? Seeing no one else come forward, we'll go ahead and close it to the public and bring it back for staff to answer, I think, a couple questions that came forward. Availability of PowerPoint being one. The availability of the PowerPoint.
In addition to, I think the request was for Dan to provide it to Ms. I will have Amy post this on the district's website tomorrow. He was continuing to make edits, and so we received the final version today. So I'm in the possession of it, so we'll make it available on the district website.
Okay. I feel like the other questions were specific to Oceano and are best addressed by OCSD.
And actually, that's a You're prophetic. Because I was going to say, I think there would be more directed towards some of the pumping characteristics that Oceano has, and be probably a discussion at your board, and then the discussion about how better to potentially use that monthly fee would probably be an individual agency. So, but I do want to say thank you to Ben for kind of giving the.
I know when I need to pick me up, I'm going to call you. Like, you made me feel so good about what we do up here. I appreciate that.
Exactly. So bringing that back to staff. So, is there anything you need from us tonight in order to better provide information to your decision making throughout the design process?
No, the item before you was just to receive the update for your knowledge and education on the status of the project currently today. There certainly will be. Dan, did you have the slide that kind of laid out the future opportunities that the board will have to weigh in on? Was that shown already?
On that token, Jeff, we're moving right. Slides, yeah.
This slide kind of summarizes, future things that will be brought back, decision points that will be brought back to your board. So the cost-sharing framework and the agreement, so there will be another opportunity coming forward. So that will be a decision point where we're laying out and making recommendations to your board to either fund certain portions or not fund certain portions. Governance structure, talking about, like, whose employees they're going to be, who's in charge of the facility. Those type of things will be ironed out, and that will come back for approval by the various boards and councils. And then if there's any needs for rate increases, obviously those would come before your board. And then mechanism, just the backfill. So we've got different agencies paying different portions right now. It's not really balanced, so at some point in the future we'll decide how to make everybody whole based on their contributions to date.
Okay. So maybe a last update to this item that you can give me with regards to decision points is, it's been a while since we've seen an update. I mean, I don't recall anything happening during the last fiscal year. So obviously there's been quite a bit of work done and some discussion behind the scenes. So who is the team that's, I'm assuming there's someone from each agency, and is there a shorter duration between these updates that as it continues to move forward, or what's the prognosis of that? I mean, is there a ad hoc committee? I don't recall how that is working behind the scenes.
Well, I'll start and let Dan fill in a little bit. So there's two committees where the project largely advances. There's a benefit and cost sharing committee, and that's made up of largely the city managers, the public works directors, and the design team. In addition to that, there's regular NCMA meetings where almost always there's an agenda item to discuss Central Coast Blue, and so those items happen frequently, monthly, twice a month, often. One of the holds could largely be attributed to, like, why you haven't. So it was May of Mr. Fine gave your board the last update. It was May of 2018. He presented here at this board, which predates both of your tenures on the board. So that was the last formal update that's been given, other than the brief updates that I've given the board. So I think, As we started to work into the Sand District site and some of those issues, and some of the figuring out could we find an off-site location, there was a lot of things in flux. You know, my turnover, like the district administrator's turnover. So I would think at this point you can expect more frequent updates of this nature. And with that, I'll turn it over to Dan so he can elaborate on kind of what he sees moving forward as the project manager.
Yeah, so I think Jeremy did a good job characterizing sort of the staff level interaction amongst the project participating or collaborating agencies, I guess. There's another subcommittee or a stakeholder subcommittee that that has met more frequently than I think the last update of this board, and that typically does include one elected representative from each of the agencies. And so that's another opportunity to get sort of more frequent updates, and those meetings will continue. I guess one of the challenges I think that we've found with, you know, the chair and the vice chair and the director of this committee is that if any two of you are at that meeting, then there's a quorum issue, and so we've had to kind of juggle attendance and have alternates. But we'll continue to try to make that work and provide more frequent updates. And then I guess sort of to the larger question, you know, the vision by the project partners with this presentation was to provide an update. It has been some time for this board and other governing bodies. And to get input, you know, and this has been great to get the questions and the type of information that these boards are going to want to see, because it's envisioned that we'll be coming back to the governing boards, the project team, for more substantial updates and action here in the next series of months.
Could you please make that more friendly for those of us over 50 who don't see little type really well?
My first note right here.
Thank you.
Sorry, go ahead.
No, I just said thank you.
Okay. I was just going to say, I know this is coming to Grover Beach on August 19th, so we'll see you then. I'm sure it's coming to Oceano and NAG, and then ending in Pismo, I think, is the goal. Very good. Any other discussion that we need to have on this item?
I just want to say that when Mr. Fine mentioned the Pismo Beach and the state water, that we got the same thing in Oceano, and we opted for state water too. So, the people now are talking about the foresight of their of their people that came before and opted for the state water. So it's a good thing.
Yeah, we had to back off it. We said no to it back then and just had to go to the voters to say, oh, please, can we go back? So.
Okay. Very good. Thank you, sir. Appreciate
that.
Great. So with that, everybody okay to keep proceeding?
Yeah.
Okay, great. Then this takes us to item 6C, cost of living adjustment and benefits for non-represented employees. Okay. So go ahead and let Gil come back as well. And turn it over to Mr. Gent for a staff report.
Good evening, Jeremy Gent, District Administrator. So the item before you is a cost of living adjustment and benefits for non-represented employees at the district. That's a total of two. That is Ms. Simpson and Mr. Jones, our Chief Plan Operator, who is not here. Mr. Jones is actually in Las Vegas, Nevada right now at the Tri-States Wastewater meeting. It's a great conference that a lot of agencies send people to. So he's there, and he'll be back on Friday, and we'll be updating staff on what's going on there. So I digress. So before you is a resolution to adopt cost of living adjustments for the non-represented employees. It largely maintains existing benefits. The noteworthy exceptions is that it includes a 2.5% pay raise as recommended. And there is also an addition of life insurance at the $25,000 level for employees. So, and then in addition to that, there's a formulaic increase for the health insurance benefits, and so that's what you see before you. There's it's a 50. So CalPERS raised rates that will go into effect on January 1st for medical insurance, and so the district has adopted a cost sharing, 50-50 cost sharing between the staff and the district for future, since 2017, future increases to medical insurance are shared 50-50. And so that formula is in here. You can see it summarized on the table in the resolution on page 1 of 5 there. You can see that Currently, for a single person, the district pays $778.45, and that stipend toward an employee only will increase to $853.37. As far as financial considerations, the adopted fiscal year 2019-2020 budget has sufficient funds to cover the proposed cost of living adjustments and modifications to benefits that are before you. And with that, I'm happy to answer any questions on the item.
Very good. Thank you for that. Any questions to my left? No. Questions to my right?
Presumably commensurate with what other employees?
So negotiations with the union are ongoing. This is consistent with an offer that has been made by the district to to the represented folks.
Thank you very much. That's my only question.
Very good. So my only question is in the resolution, and I apologize for not asking this beforehand so you were prepared for response. There's a statement there that it says the district administrator or his her designee is hereby authorized and directed to take all steps necessary to implement this resolution. Can you tell me what that means? And why we need it?
It just means that's how the last resolution was written, and I'll Gil, can you answer that question?
Way to be transparent. Yeah. I'm not. I would love to play poker with you, Jeremy. Can we do that?
So that's really boilerplate language. It's fairly common in some resolutions. Is it absolutely necessary? No, it's not, but it really doesn't affect anything. Okay.
Very good, thank you. Any other questions?
No.
Okay, very good. Is there any members of the public that want to speak on this item? Seeing no one come forward, we'll go ahead and close it and bring it back for discussion / consideration.
I'd like to make a motion that we approve the staff recommendation.
Second.
Very good. We have a motion and a second, and I will withhold my desire to to remove that sentence. Any other discussion? Roll call, please.
Director Ray Russin?
Yes.
Director Austin?
Yes.
Director Lee?
Yes. And that carries. And I think the motion was made by Board Member Austin, seconded by Ray Russin. Okay. Very good. That takes us to item 6D, which is a contract for primary clarifier number 2, rehab and control valve replacement project professional engineering services. Mr. Jennings.
Good evening. The item before you is to authorize the district administrator to execute a contract for professional engineering services with Canon Corporation in the amount of $43,240. This item is consistent with a budgeted item for rehabilitation of our primary clarifier number 2, which was budgeted for a total of, I think, $295,000 was budgeted, with approximately $50,000 earmarked for engineering services to design and bid the project. And so the item before you, district staff solicited requests for proposals. We ultimately received 2 proposals. And so we reviewed and ranked those proposals and have recommended that the district move forward with hiring Canon Corporation. They had a comprehensive proposal that illustrated a full understanding of the project, and with good recommendations. They provided excellent resumes of staff that have outstanding backgrounds in wastewater projects of a similar nature. And so with that, staff is recommending that the board authorize the administrator to enter into a contract with Canon so that we can get started on this rehabilitation work for the clarifier.
Very good. Thank you for that presentation. Any questions to my left?
Nope.
Questions to my right?
Nope.
Any members of the public that want to speak on this item? Yes, sir. Please come forward and state your name.
My name is Clark D'Souza. How many contracts are you giving to veterans? Have you even approached any veterans?
We'll go ahead and ask all your questions through me. And then
all
we'll
right,
ask
Jeff. How much? Have you asked any veterans?
So, and actually, if you can present your questions.
I'm talking to you.
And I appreciate that. So, but what we're going to do is we're going to have you ask your questions in public comment, and then we'll ask staff for their answers. So
I'm asking you directly, what have you done for veterans? Okay.
I'll let you continue with your public comment, and then we'll we'll have a discussion afterwards. We're not going to have a discussion back and forth.
So I'd like to know, what are you doing for outreach of getting veterans contracted for? They deserve the contract before everybody else. What are you doing? How come you're giving away all these contracts to unions, I'm hearing, wasting our money? So you're going to have to come up with an answer to that. I like Jeremy. He'll come up with a good answer. Sit down, Daisy.
I'm done with the question. Okay, great. Thank you very much. So we will, any other members of the public that want to come forward and speak on this item? Very good. Mr. Gent, and actually I'll answer the question after I give you the opportunity to, with respect to outreach regarding the question for solicitation of the RFP bids.
So there are, I'm struggling to find a comprehensive answer. There are opportunities where there are veterans' preferences given. Now, that doesn't, to my knowledge, it doesn't fall over into the public contract code with how we hire and award contracts. We don't have a veteran's preference or anything like that adopted by resolution as a district. I'm not sure if that's even legal. But certainly during the hiring process, you know, we rank and score people with veterans' preference. So if, you know, as far as employees go, the district does, you know, utilize those more standard operations for veteran preferences. And so that's the only thing that I'm, as I'm searching for, you know, how to best respond that I can come up with. But as far as, you know, this particular contract, there was no preference given toward veteran-owned companies or veterans working on the engineering portion of the project.
Okay. But there was also no disadvantage given to veterans. This was open to any company, whether they were veteran-owned or not. So there was no no preferential treatment presented to those that in either fashion. Correct.
Absolutely. This was a full open request for proposal. Everybody was invited to apply. We did send out specific invitations to firms that have worked for the district before, but we published it at several different locations, and it was open to any qualified engineering firm that wanted to submit a proposal.
Very good. Okay. Great. And sir, I do appreciate your comments, and I thank you.
Sir, I'm sorry. You did not answer my question.
And thank you. So we have.
Sir,
we're going to ask you. This is not a dialogue between the board. We're going to ask you to.
I asked a question, you didn't answer it.
And I'm about to attempt to do that. Thank you, sir. I will say thank you for your service, as I'm anticipating that you're a veteran. So what I have done personally is.
So for this contract.
Thank you, sir. I'm going to ask you not to have a dialogue with me at the moment, okay? Otherwise, we're going to have to continue with the item. So this specific item was, we have a qualification-based proposal, which did not discriminate against any fashion, in my understanding, to veterans or non-veterans. So with that, I believe that will be my response. So is that we have a qualification-based. I very much support veterans, sir. Thank you.
You didn't do anything for us.
Mm-hmm. So with that, I'm going to go ahead and bring it back to.
Okay.
With that, I'll bring it back to the board for consideration of the item actually before us, which is a contract for primary clarifier number 2. Any further discussion or consideration?
Nope, I'm ready to.
If you're ready.
I was looking for the recommendation, but I was looking in the wrong spot. I will move that we authorize the district administrator to execute a contract for professional engineering services with Canon Corporation in the amount of $43,240.
Second.
We have a motion and a second, and I apologize. I did have one slight, is more of a, if the contract needed to be amended, what is the administrator's change order or contingency policy at the district? If the If the contract proceeds as presented, then no changes. But if during the course of design there are change orders, what's your authority?
The purchasing policy authorizes, I believe, a $5,000 change order capacity for the administrator for contracts.
Okay. Great. Okay. Very good. So we have a motion and a second. Any clarifications based upon that discussion? If not, roll call, please.
Director Ray Russin?
Yes.
Director Austin?
Yes.
Director Lee?
Yes. So we have a contract. Very good. So that takes us next into item 6E, which is our District Administrator and Plant Operations Report. Mr. Gent.
We're almost there. So, good evening, Jeremy Gent, District Administrator. Before you, I've got a brief update on the redundancy project. So we've, as you're aware, we're in the process of soliciting RFQs for our construction management firm, and so those proposals are due on the 14th of this month, so a week from today. We just issued addendum number 5 today, so that went out to the proposers. We believe that's our final addendum. We're district and MKN are continuing down the path of looking at iBank for funding for the redundancy project. So iBank is an alternative funding source in the state of California for public works projects. It caps out at a total of, you can't apply for more than $25 million, which we satisfy that condition, and they have very competitive interest rates. It's a less involved application process than applying for USDA funding. And so it was an authorized task with Bartle Wells and Associates to a previous contract that was before your board. And so we're preparing that application. We were invited to, there's a first step where you submit information and then they invite you to apply. So we're officially invited to apply, and so now we're in the process of doing that. And so largely what the iBank funding would do is it would displace bond funding. So we would not be going out for municipal bonds if we ended up finding that it was more advantageous to go with iBank, because they right now it shows a beneficial interest rate versus standard municipal government bonds. So that's why we're continuing with that exercise. Work continues on USDA funding review and application. I did want to talk a little bit. It was mentioned earlier as far as, you know, whether the board had been kept updated on some of these issues with the USDA funding. I will say that, you know, certainly I do my best to try to let you know what's going on with the administrator's report. As far as the effort that's been involved, there was a previous Mike Nunley contract that came before you. There was a scope of services that very clearly indicated efforts on working toward finalizing the USDA funding. Also, there was a Bartle Wells contract that came before the board, illustrated work effort needed to move forward. All that to say that this is still pretty standard. There's no real hiccups with USDA. Having worked with USDA before, this continues to be typical of working with any federal bureaucracy. Where, you know, there's sometimes a little pushback. They ask for more stuff, and that's just part of getting these favorable interest terms. And so these are hoops we jump through, and so no alarm or concern. It is something that I check in with Nunley on a weekly basis with his firm to make sure that there's not anything. As soon as there's any type of hiccup with USDA that's of relevance, or that we see it as a risk to the funding, absolutely the board will be updated. So I just wanted to kind of touch on that information. Miscellaneous item: the district is participating with Five Cities Fire Authority for coordinated responses during extended power outages. This is something that's going on county. Some of your agencies may have already made you aware of that, and so the district is participating. And I believe it's Monday, the 26th or something of August, is our first roundtable with some of the agency members and the Five Cities Fire with Steve Lieberman. No plant tours. Upcoming items, I still do want to come back with district goals and priorities, but the goals and priorities have been clear over the past few months, so that item has not been prepared. I'll be brief on Mr. Jones' plant operation reports. We did have no violations during the reporting period. Plant continues to operate well. They're tackling multiple small maintenance projects around the plant. We are using our drying beds to offset energy costs, so we're not using our centrifuge. So we're realizing electrical savings by using our atmospheric drying beds. Training continues. We do weekly trainings with staff. So there, recently the operators participated in spill prevention. That's standard one you like to do annually. And no major call-outs this reporting period. With that, it ends my administrators and plant superintendent's report.
Very good. Thank you. Any questions?
I have a question.
Any questions to my right?
Yes, sir.
Very good. I just have one question, and it may turn into two. Your roundtable with Five Cities Fire Authority and under the PSPS, the Public Safety Power Shutdown. So can you just kind of give a brief synopsis of the plant's ability to run without power? I'm assuming we have generators, but I don't know if they're fuel, if they're natural gas.
So yes, that was one of the first bits. So we have diesel fuel on site, which will allow for continuous operation with the stored fuel for 50 hours, just a little over 2 days. This recent analysis or exercise that's being requested by PG&E really focuses on a planned shutdown that a utility might have to take, and this is because of some of the recent fire activity where they might have to shut down power. So they're wanting to everybody to run through what it would look like for I believe a 4 day, and I'll know more information after the roundtable. But the exercise is to analyze a 4 day power outage, and so from the Sand District standpoint, we can only run 50 hours on the stored fuel on site. If you were to ask us a month ago what was our plan, we have contracts with JB Dewar, which is a local fuel provider, and so they truck in fuel. So during those 50 hours, we would be receiving fuel. We also have the ability to move 55 gallons of fuel ourselves at the district, and we could shuttle fuel back and forth. The PG&E exercise says the whole county is without power. So JB Dewar's pumps aren't running. There's that extra effort of, this is broken and this is broken. And so that's the exercise, and we're going to have to come up with game plans, potentially analyzing the grid, looking for fuel sources in Santa Barbara County where we could maybe have an alternate fuel contract that would allow us to power the plant during an extended power outage. And so that's where we see this going, but the details have really just been email invites and a PG&E flyer that I've received to date.
Great. Thank you. Appreciate that. And my second question actually is the county moving forward with using the sanitation site for staging for their upcoming project in AG Creek?
Yes, and I did email the county in preparation of my report and asked if I could get a move-in date to update my board, and they said they would have it real soon. So it is anticipated to be, they have to be done with the work by October 15th, yeah, so certainly soon. So they've awarded a contract, and the item for the public and those still here and listening on TV, the district issued a right of entry, a temporary right of entry for the county to do some staging for some AG Creek channel, the flood control channel project that they're doing. So they will be in on the Sand District site for approximately 8 weeks, and will be using the same contractor lay down area that the redundancy project will lay down. It's unutilized property on the district site. So we anticipate them moving in within the next 3 weeks, but I don't have a specific date from either Nola or David on the actual move-in day.
Okay, great.
Thank you for that. Any members of the public that want to speak on this item? Seeing no one come forward, we'll go ahead and close that and see if there's any other discussion, direction. If not, thank you for that. We will move back up onto our miscellaneous items. Mr. Gent, any miscellaneous items this evening?
No, I covered the miscellaneous in my administrator's report.
Very good. Any board member communications?
No.
Very good. Then if not, we are adjourned. Thank you.